Pretty good weekend in the world of boxing. Maybe not all that much quality, but a lot of quantity. Of course, Anthony Joshua successful across the pond on the zone. Felix Verdejo, probably the surprise of the weekend, was Felix Verdejo getting drilled by Masashi Nakatami. Nakatami went 12 rounds with Teofimo Lopez's last fight, so I don't know why that was such a surprise, but he stopped Felix Verdejo in stunning fashion. Of course, the Puerto Rican at one point in time was called the next Felix Trinidad. Well, that ain't happening. Hour number two, of course, we're talking nothing but macho time. Of course, the new documentary out on Hector Macho Camacho talked all about his cocaine problems. I told you about the time in Puerto Rico when I went to his hotel room, when I was in the arena, and the promoter came to me and said, Camacho's not coming. And I said, what do you mean he's not coming? He goes, he's not coming. I said, no, time out. Worry. He goes, he's not coming. And if he doesn't come, you're not getting paid. And I said, well, what is that, some type of threat? He goes, no, that's just the way it is. He goes, this is it. This is real life, Pedro. He goes, what I'm trying to tell you is you got to go to the hotel and get Camacho out of there. So anyway, I went to the door of his hotel. I got a limo to go back in a tuxedo, banging on his door, this hotel, casino, bang, 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 penthouse, banging. Finally, he opens the door. There's cocaine all over the place. Everywhere you look, there's a bendel. He's got all his cocaine on the kitchen table or at the big table there. And finally, I mean, I beg him for like, yeah, I guess about 8 to 10 minutes. And finally get to the point where, I mean, he can't hit this guy. You know what I mean? I can't hit him or anything. What else can I do? I mean, begging's all I can do, boss, basically here. So anyway, he finally goes, okay, let's go. And boom, he gets into the limo and he's doing blow in the limo and he's bouncing all over the limo and I'm freaking out. I'm saying to myself, well, I got him in the car. Let's get him to the arena. Getting him into the ring is something else, right? So anyway, we get him to the arena. I give him to the promoter who was the late Harold Smith, aka Ross Fields. Smell something there. Anyway, so I give him to the promoter and I don't see him until he steps into the ring and fight Jorge Vaca. Well, the bell rings. He runs across the ring. He purposely butts Vaca, causes a foul. The fight stopped in the very first round. I'm going to say that was Hector Camacho, but at the end of the day, he walked out of the ring and he says to me, you got your money. Yeah, I got paid. Anyway, we go from that story to the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. Larry, you had some funny times with Camacho?
I can't say they were funny times, but I did once interview him and his family up in East Harlem. Mm-hmm. And I covered a number of his fights. Mm-hmm. And he was a tremendous talent. And I guess he just was one of those entertainers who can't handle all the incoming. And went off on his own and had a tragic end to his life.
Good point.
Did you like the documentary?
I haven't watched it in total yet, but I've got some clips of it. We'll air some clips in hour number two, but I will be getting on that tonight. Some other questions. Did you get a chance to see Anthony Joshua yesterday?
No, I didn't know where to find him. I looked all over, and the paper didn't say anything about it.
It was on the zone, and he knocks Pulev down four times. Pulev fought handcuffed. Godfather, I don't understand that. I know guys are bigger than you, and when you have a size disadvantage, you're at a disadvantage, okay? I mean, I understand that, sometimes emotionally as well. But you have to step forward. You have to let your hands go. You can't fight handcuffed and expect to win a fight. I mean, Anthony Joshua was square. His shoulders were square. His chin was up in the air. I mean, there were all kinds of technical flaws you might have been able to exploit had you decided to throw some punches, and Pulev never threw a punch, ever.
Well, maybe he was afraid.
That afraid thing, you know,
He stopped punching and fighting as soon as he signed the contract and made a good payday.
Okay. Things are happening. Of course, the Anthony Joshua now winning with Pulev. He's talking about possibly fighting at Tyson Fury again. But here's something I wanted to throw at you before I went into the Philly thing.
Again, they haven't fought once yet.
No. I'm trying to. What? Oh God, you threw me off there. We're talking with Larry Merchant, of course, the retired HBO Godfather, and I watched some great fights over the weekend. Not great fights, but okay fights over the weekend. I think the next great fight will be when Teofimo Lopez steps up and defends that lightweight championship. Of course, Larry's not as high on high, as high on him as I am, but I think this kid's going to, him and Shakur Stevenson, I think those two guys, you know, play possibly a couple of welterweights as well, have a chance to be the face of boxing. And there's a chance, you know, Canelo's not going to be here forever.
No, I don't know where you get the idea that I didn't like Lopez. I did like him a lot.
Okay.
I mean, we have to see what he does next, whether they're going to give him some soft opponents. I mean, nobody expects a champion to fight the toughest guy out there every single time. He has to get some reward for winning the title. I'm curious. He's a young guy, and he looks like a tremendous talent, really, really strong, really self-possessed. I like him a lot.
The guy that he's going to fight is from across the – he's from Australia. I can't think – oh, there it is. George Kambrasis Jr. He beat Leo Selby a couple of weeks ago in the U.K. on a split decision. I thought that was unanimous, but he's 19 and zip. And what they're willing to do is they're willing to give Lopez a lot of money to go to Australia and fight a guy that he's supposed to beat. He's got a good record, this and that. So I think this will be a good time to take advantage of that because, as you said, you got to make some money. When the idea – people say to me – you know, championships, championships, championships. Well, you can have a lot of belts, but if you don't have any money to pay the bills won't do anything for you.
No, I get it. But, you know, some fighters and promoters go way beyond the pale by avoiding obvious big fights because they present
threats. A threat.
A chance to lose.
Yep.
And they want to get paid outrageously for fighting a competitive fight. And the result is we don't get a lot of big competitive fights at the top end of the game.
When Terrence Crawford said, F it. That was his exact quote, F it. And I can't say that on the air, but he's going back to 135. That would be, you know, I don't think I personally, after thinking about him living at 147 and going back to 135, I think he's biting off more than he can chew because 12 pounds is a lot to lose.
Well, I don't know if he's a natural welterweight, but it sounds to me like he decided that when he saw Spence dismantle Garcia, he decided he didn't want any part of Spence.
Well,
I mean, I can't find any excuse for it since it would be the biggest a fight in that division, and it would be a sizable pay-per-view. If he goes back to 135, I don't know what he has in mind, but it sounds like a guy who's ducking an opportunity to make a lot of money to fight an outstanding fighter.
You know, they both want to fight, and it's not me because I'm like in my 60s. They want to fight. They want to fight Manny Pacquiao, who's 41. I mean, that's who they both. That's both like number one on their list there. I understand that's where the money's at. But isn't Pacquiao at an incredible size disadvantage against both those guys, especially Spence?
Yeah, tell me something I don't know, but.
I'm leading to a question here.
Okay, everybody wants to fight him for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
He ain't what he used to be, although he's still pretty darn good, as he showed in his last fight. And that's where the money is.
You know, being a former fighter, is he kept moving up in weight. That kept saying, this is it, this is it, this is it, this is it. Because I couldn't put on the weight and fight. I mean, guys I know couldn't put on the weight and fight, and yet he did it, man. But an incredible athlete, no doubt about that. A champion, of course, from 112 to 147 pounds. I think he held a 54-pound title for a minute. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. We return from the break. We talk about the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, PA, and what it meant to the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. Of course, he spent some time there. He knows Philly. Larry knows Philly. We're back, Larry and Philly, on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
knock him on the early rounds, but like I said, he brings excellent condition and he's determined.
Why didn't you go after him to try to knock him out when you knocked him down early in the third round?
I said, why get callous if I've been training for 2 months?
Here's the knockdown. Describe it to us as you see it.
Well, like I told Jimmy, the 1-2 with you, I'm gonna get him all the time. But I wasn't going to get overexcited and play myself cheap. I said, I'll knock him out early if it happens. If not, if it's necessary, I'll go 12 rounds, and I did.
Did you go to school, so to speak, on what happened to Rosario when he knocked him down and then got knocked out himself?
No, because I knocked down a lot of fighters that still took my time. I'm just getting seasoned through every fight, and I'm pound for pound. I'm the best fighter pound for pound in the world. Bring him on. Bring him on. Mancini, I don't respect your opinion. Come on, baby. I can knock you out.
Well, who are some of the fighters?
Willica, you could get some, baby. You could get some, too. Brian Boone, Jimmy Paul, Sammy Holmes, all your come on with it, baby. Yeah, buddy. Let's hear from you, Larry.
What about Aaron Pryor?
Aaron Pryor? Come on with it, baby. I got faith in you. You bounce back. I know you. Come on, baby. Come on with it. It's my show time.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
August 10th, 1985. Larry Merchant and the late Hector Camacho at the Riviera Hotel after a 12-round decision over Jose Luis Ramirez. Of course, Jose Luis Ramirez, a guy that I spent some time with down there in San Jose, a rough customer, no doubt about that, and the former lightweight champion. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing, the MMA. No city sort of has a boxing aura about it like Philadelphia. Don't ask me why, but people tell me Philly fighters are different, with the exception of Danny Garcia. Philly fighters are different. And the retired HBO godfather, Larry Merchant, spent a lot of time in Philly. How much time did you spend in Philly, and when did you get there, Larry?
I got there in the mid-50s and was there for about a decade as a photo editor, a sports editor, and columnist. And I still have a good feeling about Philadelphia in the pit of my stomach.
What good feeling? I mean, outside of me ruining a $200 pair of shoes one time, stepping out of a car and into a puddle, I haven't got too many fond memories of Philadelphia. So tell me about yours.
Well, I have a lot of fond memories. I became sports editor. I was photo editor, when I found out that a few streets away from our offices, there was an all-night theater. And there was a guy who sold the tickets and made sure that things didn't ever get out of hand. Mm-hmm. His name was Bob Montgomery, ooh, one of the best lightweights ever. And I wrote a piece about it, even though nobody asked me to write about him and so on. And I submitted it, and ultimately it led to my becoming sports editor. And Philadelphia had a very lively boxing scene, dozens and dozens and dozens of gyms all over the place. And you had to fight your way out of those gyms to get into the real world. And so the guys who did fight their way out were pretty good and pretty tough. And it was a lively boxing scene, and it had even been livelier before I got there, and when they would have boxing shows every night of the week.
I'm sorry. Meldrick Taylor was a Philly fighter. You know, that fight, of course, with Chavez, where he was leading after 11 rounds and he went out there and decided to fight Chavez in the 12th round and got knocked out. Was that the Philly fighter in him?
I would say yes. I think that he had been hurt before that 12th round, mm-hmm, and wasn't all there. But for the referee to stop that fight with 3 seconds left, seemed to me not an example of justice in boxing.
Oh, But Godfather, here I was looking into his eyes. I was looking into the fighter's eyes, and he's looking at Lou Duva. Lou Duva was standing up on the ring apron, waving his hands. In other words, Lou Duva was distracting the kid. And a lot of times, as amateurs, this is what I was always told, Godfather: if you get knocked down, look to your corner. So you always look to your corner when you get hurt.
Well, yes, and Lou Duva was an excitable guy and personality and trainer.
Mm-hmm.
He got up, but he didn't tell him to stop the fight. That's not what he was doing. And still, in all, there were 3 seconds left in the fight. The buzzer in the corner had lit up as a flag that it was coming to an end, and still the referee stopped the fight. And that referee, I forget his name,
Richard Steele.
Yeah, and he didn't get many, if any, fights to do in Philadelphia after that, or anywhere else.
Yeah, he became a gym owner / manager with his wife. What about Frank? What about this guy? They had a mayor in Philadelphia named Frank Rizzo. I mean, did you ever come in contact with him? Was he the mob? Or what was Frank Rizzo about?
Well, Rizzo had been police commissioner and had apparently been effective in going after the bad guys. I don't know if he went after all the bad guys, but he became a popular police commissioner and then mayor. But I was gone for most of the time that he was mayor. I may have been there briefly when I left in the mid-60s to go to New York. But Philadelphia was a rough town. It was a town that celebrated the high arts as well as the low arts. They had a famous conductor there named Eugene Ormandy, and in a music hall, he performed in a music hall across the street from a restaurant, the name of which I forget. Oh, Tendler, Lou Tendler. Lou Tendler had been an outstanding lightweight in the 20s, and he had this restaurant where boxing people hung out. So that was the both sides of Philadelphia, on Market Street, and the great arts, the music, the jazz. I saw Duke Ellington and many others perform in Philadelphia. Nina Simone. And of course, I went to many fights, and they had great fighters. Let me check. There was a guy there named a manager named Georgie Katz, and he managed a young whirlwind named I can't think of his first name, Turner.
Ike.
And he put Turner in when he was 20 or 21 years old. He put him in with who was the great fighter from Cuba in those days?
Annapolis?
No, this was before Annapolis.
Kid Gavilan?
Kid Gavilan. Gavilan was an experienced, strong opponent, and he beat Turner up. And Georgie Katz used to say, "I turned a champion into a contender."
You know, I gave Kid Gavilan a microphone one time around 2000 in Miami, Florida. You don't give microphones to ex-fighters. You don't give microphones to children. Believe me. You know what I'm talking about with that Godfather? You never knew what they're going to say. I mean, he went absolutely nuts when I gave him the microphone. But anyway, great fighter that he was, Kid Gavilan. What about the non-boxing sports guys in Philly? What about them? Who were they?
Oh, well, I would say the two biggest guys in... Well, there were 3 or 4 in football. Chuck Bednarik, who had been an All-American at the University of Pennsylvania, and then became the star of a championship team was a great linebacker. I think he was the model for all modern linebackers. He was about 6'3" and 240 and quick and smart. And that was at a time when you had linemen who weighed 210 pounds. Then they had Norm Van Brocklin, who had been traded from Los Angeles, and Van Brocklin led, and I mean do mean led, in every sense of the term, the Eagles to a championship in 1960, and became the only quarterback in NFL history to win championships with different teams. And in baseball, they had Robin Roberts, the great Hall of Fame pitcher. When I arrived in the mid-50s, when I was there, they had some of the leftovers of a team in the 1950s, earlier in the decade, called the Whiz Kids.
You know, Godfather, we're running up on a hard break. Let's stick around and continue this conversation after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Larry Merchant on the City of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. North Philly was a little rough for me. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live World.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
What you gonna play now?
Bobby, I don't know. But whatsoever I play, it's got to be funky.
Yeah.
One, two, three, make it funky. Make it
funky. The Godfather of Soul, Mr. James Brown.
I got to
see him one time. Got a couple stories about him. I'll let that go for another day. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Larry, you talking about the big Philly athletes who weren't associated with boxing in Philadelphia.
I didn't mention Will Chamberlain, who was a high school phenomenon in Philadelphia and then played professionally there.
Okay, why, now how, I gotta ask you this. Why in the hell would the Warriors trade away Will Chamberlain? Why would they trade away Will Chamberlain? I never got that. I never understood that. Did somebody put a gun to their head, like, you know, kidnapped?
No, I think I was gone when that happened, but Will Chamberlain was a prima donna. And I was in the 76ers dressing room one time, and he started to ream out their coach, Frank McGuire, a famous championship coach, because McGuire had called a practice the next day, and Will Chamberlain was scheduled to go to New York City and hang out there. And he started yelling at Frank McGuire while I was there. Mm-hmm. So he was not an easy guy to deal with. And that's why he never won many championships playing against the Bill Russell Celtics. But he was a good guy. I liked him. I wrote columns about him. But he was a prima donna, and it didn't work.
He was 7 foot tall. I mean, he was like the first 7-footer, wasn't he?
He was like 7'1", and he was a track star.
And he allegedly, he was a star between the sheets too.
Well, he claimed that. I think he said he had 10,000 women or some number.
Yeah, well, good luck with that one, Will. did you ever come in contact with Angelo Bruno when you were in Philadelphia, the mob boss? Do you remember him?
Yes, of course. He was an important character in the boxing scene. I'm sure I was at many fights with him. I didn't have direct contact, but if you got time for a little story, there was a they had a fighter named Len Matthews, one of the best-looking young fighters I ever saw. And he was fighting some barely opponent in Philadelphia. And that week, at a club fight, two guys who had had a fight on the job were given permission to fight on the undercard.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline in the Daily News was, "He called me a lousy bricklayer." And the next day, the headline was, "He is a lousy bricklayer." They had to call the fire department out because there were so many people trying to cram into that fight club. So the mob people there tried to make a meeting with me, and they came up to my office, and we went out into a little side place, and they started taking money out of their pockets to give me. And I said, "Whoa, that's not how it works."
You know,
but that was Philly.
Yeah, I remember when Joey Merlino was running the mob, I guess he was running the mob. 1990, he showed up at a party post-fight. We all did a fight in Atlantic City. I think it was a Ray Mercer, Tommy Morrison fight. And Joey Merlino showed up at the post-fight press conference. And that was a little scary. I mean, it was a little scary being around. It was just a little bit scary. I mean, I didn't want to have any issues with him, obviously. I mean, the head of the mob. With that being said, you and the Godmama have a wonderful week. You guys got any special plans? I know I'm still in isolation up here.
Well, so it was. You know, I like to say we're entering the championship round.
We are.
Of this COVID thing, and we got to nail it down.
What?
Not go crazy. It's understandable. People want to resume their social lives, but now's the time when you got to hunker down and beat it in the championship rounds.
You know, I said last week that I think that if you had a little military training or you were a dedicated athlete, you'd probably be better equipped to deal with this pandemic because you've been deprived. You had to make sacrifices and you realize that. And you know, with the sacrifice I'm asking people to make is that they wear a mask and not get themselves sick and not get other people sick. And that seems to be infringing on people's rights. Anyway, you have a wonderful week. Kiss the Godmama for me. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Pedro.
The one, the only, the retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant.